are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
You do that, hey, a little too well there, Ben.
Hi.
And you were telling me you weren't bridging tunnel.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
The most aggressive base runner in all of baseball last year was Keon Broxton. 28 stolen base attempts in his 220 at bats or whatever it was.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
All I know is
I'll give you my left shoe.
He'll give you Neil Walker for him. And you know how he feels about Neil Walker.
No, not Neil Walker. I love him.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am joined by Evan Peterson and Chuck Anderson. How are you guys doing tonight? Chuck, how are you doing?
I am doing phenomenal. This is the most exciting week of the year for me. My home leagues happen this week. We're on the cusp of actual regular season baseball, which I love, of course. So let's get her rolling.
And how about you, Evan? You doing good?
I'm doing phenomenal. I'm finishing up my last slow draft. All of my other drafts are pretty much in the books. It's baseball season. We made it.
Yeah, I have. I'm in the middle of a slow draft right now, and I have one draft on Sunday night. So it kind of sucks that I miss the first couple games in terms of the statistics. But it's not that big of a deal. But so, did you guys have a good weekend? Did you guys do any drafts? You guys want to talk about any potential draft things that happened? Anything?
I'd love to hop on out there because I had one of the most interesting drafts of my life last night for a league that actually counted for more than just, dignity and bragging rights. So I was drafting at the end. I was at the wheel, and the guy in front of me, I was warned that he was going to be a little crazy. Apparently, he's a big Red Sox fan, and you'll see why in a second. But I was told he was going to take Xander Bogaerts with the number 11 pick in front of me, which was cool. I decided I was going to get really drunk the rest of the night because I figured the draft would come easy for me. But if you gentlemen would allow me, I'm going to take a minute and read off the draft picks and their overall in the draft. Are you ready?
Yes.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay. 11th overall pick, Xander Bogaerts. He followed up with Chris Sale in the second round, which was fine. He took Pedroia, 35th overall, and followed up with Javi Baez at 38 for his round 4 pick. Skip on down. He took Jacoby Ellsbury at 131 overall and took Didi Gregorius at 134. Took Brock Holt at 155, which I thought was interesting. Mitch Moreland went 179. Chase Headley, 203. My boy Brett Gardner at 206. If you're noticing a theme here, it's Red Sox and Yankees. Sandy Leone at 227. Luis Severino at 230. It just continues to go on. So it was the best draft of my life. And I hope there's a guy like this in every one of your leagues this week, because this is what fantasy baseball is all about to me.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty legit draft. I don't really understand why you hate it.
I know, and I hate analyzing people's drafts because, like,
are you sure?
This is why
you seem to do it quite often.
I know. But, I mean, like Chuck was saying somewhere else in the staff chat, this is why we play the games out. I mean, he could be completely right, and I look like a dumbass, so.
That happens often with you, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Good job.
Chuck, what about you? You got any draft stories for us?
Well, I don't have any draft stories. We had the interesting conversation today in the chat room about the fact that with my second to last pick in our 16-team league, I went off a rumor that I heard on Twitter that Raul Mondesi Jr. was going to make the team and be the regular leadoff hitter for the Royals this season, and that was confirmed today. So we spent some time ridiculing me because, by all accounts, Raul Mondesi Jr. has pretty much sucked to this point in his life as a baseball player at the professional level, and I defended myself by saying that he's hasn't even turned 20 yet, so I'm going to take my chances on some improvement if the Royals feel like he's ready to be their leadoff hitter. So that's about the only story I have because my slow drafts and stuff are done, and my local leagues all happened this week. But if you did not know that out there, Raul Mondesi Jr. is slated by Ned Yost to be the regular leadoff hitter and the starting second baseman for the Royals.
I mean, I think overall that's pretty big news considering that we all kind of projected him. It's like what Matt Thompson was saying in the staff league chat that we have, that everyone's pegged him basically as a shortstop of the future, even though he has a lot to work on. And it's kind of surprising that they're starting his clock now, which I agree with. I don't know about you, Evan. Do you disagree with that? Or are you on board with them bringing him up this early, even though it doesn't really make a ton of sense?
I mean, my thoughts on the Royals have been well documented. The one thing I will say is that division is like the Indians and everybody else. And if the Royals want to be part of everybody else, then they need to figure out what the hell is going on at that second base position. I really don't think they're better than the Tigers, so I don't know why they would kind of mess around if you look at it from a real baseball perspective. But it's one of those things that, I mean, I think Chuck is just trying to inflate his trade value, but who knows?
Yeah, Chuck, I really want him now just because you've talked up his trade value. You make me want him. I'll give you anything you want for him. What do you want? I'll give you my left shoe.
He'll give you Neil Walker for him. No, and you know how he feels about Neil Walker.
No, not Neil Walker. I love him.
I would love to. I should have gone back and seen the other players that were taken around that spot, because all I know is that it was really thin pickings at the time, and I think that if he's the starting second baseman for 2 months and he gives me 15 steals in those 2 months, I'll be happy as a clam.
Do you know
a whole lot
him?
More than that? Yeah, I took him with my second to last pick. And that was the 14th pick of the second to last round, I believe.
Well, I almost had it, but Chrome has been messing with me today. It was a great pick, Chuck. I love it and everything about it. Ben, did you have an interesting weekend? I think that's what really matters.
I did, but some of the there were some interesting players. To be fair to Chuck, there were some interesting players. You know,
wait on me.
Ryan Zimmerman, Rondon, Thornburg, Stephen Wright, Knebel, Pluth, Triggs, Shelby Miller, De Leon, Perkins, Aaron Judge, Bartolo Colon, Denard Span, Alex Wood. Those are all somewhat decent value guys that were in the second to last round and stuff like that. And then in the last round,
I'll tell you what they were. They were really speculative dice throws, exactly. Just like Chuck said. He took a half-assed rumor that he saw somewhere on Twitter, probably from some Royals fanboy in his basement, and look how it went. So you never know.
Well, the only thing I would say is that I agree with you that some of those players probably offer more overall value, but I was concerned about steals when I had heard that Carlos Gomez was a little nicked up, etc. So I was worried about steals, and I didn't hear you say anybody besides Span that offers anything in steals.
If you want steals, man, I got like Jason Worth.
Oh boy, thanks.
I got Yadi Molina, Albert Pujols. I got Manny Machado. You know, and those guys are really good for steals.
Yeah, they're great. That Albert Pujols catches people sleeping like 3 or 4 times a year.
So does Yadi Molina.
That is very, very much a truism.
Yeah.
So anyway, why don't you tell us about Tout Wars? Because I agree with Evan. Let's hear about your weekend.
Yeah.
Friend.
So I was in Tout Wars in New York this week, and I met Justin Mason, Mike Werner, and Eli Rosenzweig in person. Oh, and Andy Anderson. So those are.
Did you get their autographs?
I did not because I work with them. It would have been bad. I would have felt awkward around the others.
Oh, well.
But yeah, so it was nice. We kind of got to meet the guys in person. We were helping out with the social media for Tout Wars. Justin has some exciting news about Tout Wars. He was able to talk to a bunch of people. You know, I met people like Todd Zoa, Tristan Cockroft, Paul Spohr.
Did you get their autographs?
I didn't. I didn't ask for autographs, no.
Damn it! Okay.
I have tweets from people, so I guess that's different. I met people like Joe Pisapia and Jason Collette. So, you know, it was a good chance to be able to meet everyone and just get a better understanding of how a big industry draft like Tout Wars works. But it was nice to be able to be part of it. It was a really great community, and it was just a really exciting weekend to be able to spend time with other like-minded fantasy people, especially people that we work with.
Well, the good news is that not only do we get the hobnobbing and the name-dropping, but sounds like we get to have you talk about some of the auction strategies and some of the strategies that you saw at work, and then me and Evan can throw some ideas on how we feel about those back at you.
Yeah.
So then I did a little player review, and we'll do some player review of what we saw the picks were at Tout Wars, and you guys can chime in on if you agree with the ones I thought were horrible or the ones that I thought were good. So why don't you fire away and roll that – steamroll that extra domino effect, that extra experience this weekend for us, brother.
I'm going to take the draft that our very own Justin Mason participated in. He stepped in for a sick Stefania Bell, and he was in the Tout Wars head-to-head auction. And there was a lot of very good strategies that I saw in this. So Justin actually had the very first nomination. He nominated Trey Turner. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I would say that Trey Turner is probably the most controversial player in drafts this entire season because no one has any idea where he's going to go. You know, it's kind of like Bryce Harper last year. You expect him to redo what he had done 2 years ago, but you weren't entirely sure. You didn't know what Carlos Correa was going to do exactly. There's a couple players last year that you took that you weren't entirely positive about what they were going to do, but they had such great seasons that you had to hope. And that's what you see from Trey Turner this year. Trey Turner is someone who has top 10 potential in a lot of people's eyes because of the steals, because he can hit for home runs, because he gets hits, so he's on base. He's going to score a lot of runs if he's high up in that order, which it looks like he's going to be either leading off or second in that lineup, most likely leading off. But what do you guys think of having a player like that nominated first? Chuck?
Well, I think it makes perfect sense. I mean, not only do you hopefully start a bidding war, but you get a feel for how much top-level players are going to go for. Because even in a room amongst experts, and it seems like experts are especially skeptical of Trey Turner, repeating the type of performance that he had last year, you get to get a feel for the pulse of the room as to how high they're going to push players that they consider first-round talents. So as far as a barometer, and for someone that I know, you know, Justin hasn't been in this type of an auction setting before with this high-brass industry, I think that was an excellent ploy on his part, and since he drafted a really good team, I think it worked for him.
Yeah. And what about you, Evan?
As far as Trey Turner coming out first, I totally agree with what you said about him being the most controversial, you know, player out there, and it's a great way. I mean, we were talking about if Justin really wanted Turner or not as kind of a way to drown the pool and get a bidding war, or else otherwise you're going to throw him out and get absolute crickets, and not absolute crickets, but he's going to go for way less than you expected because people are like, well, maybe we'll just wait and see what everybody else is doing. So I like throwing Turner out first, and I like Turner this year. Fuck it, I'm in.
I mean, there were some players nominated that had absolute crickets. Like, give me a player that you guys think that would get nominated that's normally a high-value player that due to some due to some injury news this offseason, would have crickets around them when they get nominated.
Lance McCullers.
And what about you, Chuck?
Jason Kipnis.
Oh, yeah.
David Price. David Price okay. got nominated for $6 and total crickets. In fact, there was a little bit of laughter because everyone was kind of shocked that no one even took a stab at it. Like, would you, like, $6 is low, and yes, we know that he is hurt and we don't know what's going to happen to him, but I would say that if you get 10 good starts out of him this year, that $6 is pretty worth it, wouldn't you agree, given what David Price is able to do?
It's definitely a good upside play for $6. I don't have any issue with the $6. I think that you're going to run into leagues where people are still valuing him as if he's a top 25 or top 30 pitcher, and I think that's when things get crazy. But $6 is a perfectly legitimate gamble on David Price, considering, you know, I've seen the other prices, etc., and pitchers with far less upside have done that, and it's not like Price is expecting to be out all year at this point.
Yeah, like Taiwan Walker went for $5.
Aaron Nola went for $5. I know there's a lot of injury concern on him coming off last year.
Michael Pineda went for $9. Matt Moore went for $6.
Disgusting.
Daniel Norris went for $4. You know, it's some things. It's players like that make you like think of great value at times, and then there's times in which you're like kind of scratching your head a little bit. But that's what happens when it's an auction. Like,
hey Ben, so since you were there, Michael Brantley at $3, crickets?
No, you know, it was actually surprising. Like, he had gotten nominated closer to the end of the draft when there was only a few people who had roster spaces, and the person actually thought he was going to get him for $1. And he had to go up to $3, and he was actually kind of surprised because if the other guy had made a bid, he wouldn't have been able to afford to go to $5. But if I recall correctly, the other guy was not able to go to $4. So it worked out because there was a couple of players who seemed to have interest in him. And they, while they're not happy about the shoulder injury, they thought that was worth $1, and they were willing to protect that investment with an extra $1 on top of that, basically. But, you know, there was a couple other players that gave some really good value that you just didn't expect. And it was kind of shocking because, like I said, they've changed how the tout stat lines are. It's a K per nine. So, like, for me, I thought that J-Hap going for $1 was, like, a really good value, but it's a K per nine league where he doesn't excel in getting a ton of strikeouts. So, for that aspect, like, it drops him down the list a little bit. But then you get someone like... I'm going to have to edit this out.
Like a Robbie Ray for $5
yeah,
in a K per nine league?
Like a Robbie Ray or a Lance McCullers who went for $10, or a Danny Salazar who went for $7, you know, players like that. And those were a couple of those players were bought by Justin. But then you have a couple other players that don't get a ton of Ks, but it's like you were saying, Robbie Ray is a guy who gets a ton of Ks, but has other stuff to work on. You see someone like Aaron Sanchez who
John. Okay, it's a K per nine league, and John Gray went for $3.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, John Gray got dropped down, and a lot of people weren't putting him out. Aaron Sanchez took forever to come out. I would say that we probably went at least 130 picks before Aaron Sanchez even was nominated. And that's me being generous, I believe. But, like, that's the thing. I kept forgetting that it's a K per nine league, and I was like, I don't understand why someone like Aaron Sanchez or Jonathan Gray is not being thrown out. And Jonathan Gray probably should have been thrown out a little sooner. But when you do have people who are bidding, and when you have a run on players, it makes it tough to focus on who's still on the board, especially when you're doing it all live. It's tough to remember when you can't see it on the screen in front of you who the top players are. You have to have it written down. You know, so that I can understand from that aspect it makes it tough. Like, there are some players that didn't go. Like, Wilson Ramos wasn't even drafted. He wasn't drafted in the reserve round. He wasn't drafted in the regular round for a dollar. I thought that he was going to be someone who someone would take a leap of faith on for a dollar at the back end of the draft and try to put them on the DL. And I'm surprised that it didn't happen right away. What are your guys' thoughts on something of that type of situation? Because it is a two-catcher league. Don't you think that Wilson Ramos is the type of player that probably would be nominated in most situations like that?
Most of the leagues that I've been in, I think Wilson Ramos is a guy that people would take a chance on if they have an injury slot, especially with as good of a year as he had coming off the eye surgery, the LASIK surgery that supposedly was such a boost to his career and to his hitting last year. That being said, you know, it depends on exactly how much everyone is fearing that they're going to need all their injury slots. If you have a couple guys that are dinged up and you don't know if they're going to start the year on the DL, etc., then all of a sudden those slots can become kind of hard to come by too. So I think it's an individual owner thing. If you think everyone's healthy, then you can take gambles like that. If you have a lot of players that you don't trust to be healthy for most of the year, you know, if you start with a Dodger pitchers and such, then all of a sudden you got to realize that more than likely you're going to need a lot of DL spots throughout the year.
What about you, Evan?
I'm sorry, I zoned out. I was looking at teams and different things like that, so pass. Okay. I was looking at catchers, and I was just trying to figure out, like, which way I would want to go, because, like, I really like LaCroix, but for $18, like, I think I'd rather take, you know, something like, Wellington Castillo and Sal Perez for a combined $11, and then spend that money elsewhere.
And that's the thing. That's what a lot of people were doing. Like, I was kind of surprised. Like, in a Caper 9 league, not to switch back to pitchers, but in the Caper 9 league, relievers get a lot more valued than a bunch of back end starters, wouldn't you agree? Someone like Jordan Zimmerman. Yes. Or like someone like an Andrew Miller or Dylan Betances becomes so much more valuable in that type of league than someone like a Jordan Zimmerman, like you were saying. And now that's the case in general. But then let's take someone who we've talked about on this podcast, Jim Johnson. Jim Johnson, even though he gets saves, is not going to be anywhere close potentially to the same value that something like a Dylan Patances or an Andrew Miller is going to be able to provide because of the K per nine. He's going to drive that down. You know, stuff like that. That's what props up some of these guys like a Sean Kelly. If he gets the closer's job in Washington, he's the type of player that over the last couple of years has had gone 50 innings and had like a 30% K rate. And he's joined like Chapman and Kenley Jansen, one other pitcher, I think. But they're like one of the only four who have done it the last three seasons. So, you know, a player like that is extremely valuable. Someone who gets a ton of Ks in is in a position to get saves. So that would drop someone like Jim Johnson potentially even more than what he would have.
Not if you listen to this podcast, and believe me.
I was just waiting for that. But yeah, that's the thing. Like you were saying, you want to be able to find the value in players. Like, let me ask you guys a question. Where exactly do you have Yoenis Cespedes in terms of your total outfielder ranks for this season? Top 15?
Sounds about right.
What about you, Chuck?
I see him going deeper than that in a lot of leagues, and I don't really understand it, especially in roto leagues. He shouldn't go deeper than that because he's in prime position for RBIs, and he's really produced power and changed his career around since a couple years ago, right before he left Oakland. So I think he's wildly underdrafted right now as a player.
Well, did you guys expect that McCutchen, Yelich, Springer, and Ryan Braun would all go for more money than him in this draft? Like, McCutchen went for $8 more.
I'm not sure any of them should go for more money than him.
Now, I can understand in an OBP league, why?
Which isn't in an OBP league?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I can understand it, but it's not like he's, like, inept from walking, you know? But are you really the type of player that's going to go spend an extra $8 on Andrew McCutchen over Yoenis Cespedes?
Not $8, but I would spend more money on McCutchen than Cespedes in that situation.
So let's take someone else. In that type of league, how high is Bryce Harper for you then?
In an OBP league?
Yes.
It's insane. He's got to go probably no later than fifth or sixth.
Sixth overall or sixth for outfielders?
Oh, no. I was talking about sixth overall. He'd probably be so I'm thinking Betts, Bryant, because he's technically an outfielder, he'd be third.
So then, and Trout.
And Trout, sorry.
Oh, so, Duh. So then you'd be willing to spend $44 on a player like that, you know?
I hate Bryce Harper, and I've written about it elsewhere, but I mean, that's other than that. But yeah, in an OBP league, you can't deny.
That's the thing. There's players you got to look at it this way. Like Tristan Cockcroft writes about this every single year. You always have to know what your draft format is. Players like Starling Marte are less, significantly less valuable in a points league than in a roto league. And a player like Carlos Santana is significantly more important in the points league than a roto league because of how many walks he takes. Look at Jock Peterson. Jock Peterson is barely usable in a standard roto league, but in an OBP league, he's phenomenal because of how many walks he takes. And that's the thing. You always got to be able to take everything into different accounts. And so, if you look at Paul Espora's draft, he went and spent $94 between Mike Trout and Bryce Harper. He then went to spend another $25 on Trevor Story. He went to spend $41 on both Arenado and $41 on Votto. You know, you spend a ton of that money in the first on five picks, but those are all OBP monsters, you know?
Yeah. Real quick, just I don't mean to interrupt your train of thought, but it's kind of what I do around here. So while I have Cespedes' page up, in an OBP league, could you tell me the difference between him and Jock Peterson?
$5.
I don't think it's a lot. Like if you're talking a snake draft, why? I mean, maybe that shows what Jock Peterson does in an OBP league. Maybe it shows what Yoenis Cespedes doesn't do. But it's the same thing to me.
Who would you write? Is it close?
No, I mean, I'd still take Cespedes because I think he's the better bet to hit 30 overall. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I've been hearing a lot about Jock against left-handers this year, and okay, who knows? Maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. But I think Cespedes is just a better hitter, personally.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I'd still be more interested in Jock Peterson in this type of league.
Yeah, but in an OBP league, so, like, Cespedes will go, like, what, 40th over? Like, I'm just kind of throwing numbers out there. Like,
with an auction, it makes it tough. He could get nominated in the first 10 picks. He could get nominated at pick 80.
Which is why it's hard to break down an auction.
Exactly. But this is how you can break down an auction. When you go in terms of relative position value, basically. So someone took Daniel Murphy at $13, which is...
Did you steal this from Joe Piscopo, by the way, with RPV and whatnot?
No.
Dude, I'm just kidding. Go ahead, sorry.
I was thinking that. I started saying it. I was like, oh my god, am I starting to steal Joe Piscopo's information? I'm going to steal the black book. But no, if you look at Joe Murphy, if you go look at Daniel Murphy, he went for $13, you know. We had talked about a player like Todd Frazier in an OBP league, and he went for $2 more. And it's not like Murphy walks a ton, but it's not like Murphy doesn't walk. And when he gets as high of a batting average as he had last year, which is kind of sustainable considering the strikeout rate that he has and the ability for him to put a ball in play, it is reasonable for him to have another good OBP season. You know, especially when you have someone like Anthony Rendon or Evan Longoria, who are around the same price point, or Alex Bregman, who's around the same price point as him. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Yeah, I've struggled to figure out why Murphy is getting so undervalued in drafts. I got him in the third round of our staff league, too, a 16-team staff league. I get him with the 15th pick in the third round, which absolutely floored me. That's also an OBP league. So I guess if you don't think his batting average is sustainable, maybe he's not a great OBP guy. But it's still hard to argue with a guy who's hitting fourth on that team for the kind of situation that he's in. He's in a great situation, or he's hitting either third or fourth on that team. He's in a great situation to succeed in all the other numbers. I think one thing that I'm noticing in your strain of thought here, Ben, is like you can overly focus on the guys who are good at one category in your format and forget that they still have to be good baseball players. Like Jock Peterson, and you hinted at this, or Evan hinted at this, Jock Peterson might end up having to sit against all left-handed pitching. So it's really great that he takes walks when he does play. If he's not good enough to stay on the field, I don't know exactly how much that helps. And Jock Peterson did a lot of sitting last year for guys like Kike Hernandez, et cetera, and so forth, not exactly good players. So I agree with your line of thought. I just maybe don't agree to the extreme that you're going to it. Like, you still have to have a good baseball player. And no one's really sure that Jock Peterson is a good major league player yet.
Exactly.
Or they shouldn't be.
Yeah. And
but what he has done is he's shown an ability to get walks. I mean, in an OBP league, if you're looking, like, that's a skill that you're looking for. He's shown in elite, may not be the word, but he's shown an above average skill because people are scared of his power. The power will drive walks because people will pitch around him in an OBP league. That's what you want.
Yes, but you have to remember that his OBP is less valuable if he gets 250 less at bats because he's not a good player. And I'm not saying that Jock Peterson's not a good player. I think the jury is out on Jock Peterson. I think he could come out and make some strides and be a very good player. He's got the lineage to do it.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that, and I don't think that this is that Ben's trying to blow this too far out of proportion. So I'm not trying to rain on him by any means. I'm just saying that I think it's a balance that right. you have to remember, you know, oh, this guy's really, really great at OBP leagues. Well, remember that if he's likely to finish, you know, 10 home runs behind Yoenis Cespedes, 35 RBIs behind Yoenis Cespedes, and 15 runs behind Yoenis Cespedes, those gains that you got in OBP are lessened if he has to sit against tough lefties on top of it, and all of a sudden you kind of have to play a balance with it. Late in a draft, yep, Jock Peterson, when he wouldn't normally be nominated, he's worth a lot. But in the middle of a draft, going extra dollars for him in an auction or what have you might not be your best way to spend money either if the playing time isn't guaranteed to be there.
Okay, so to touch on a couple of things that you mentioned before, you were saying, well, if he gets less at bats, then it's not going to be as beneficial. Well, if he's getting less at bats and he's limiting exposure on what he sucks at, then theoretically his OBP should be higher and it's going to boost you more, or at least that's my thinking, and I may be wrong. And even still, if he's sitting, I'm going to call this the Giancarlo Stanton theory, where even if he misses, 25 games because he's getting sat for tough lefties or whatever, like, he could still put up 25 home runs. I mean, he could still be productive. He might hurt you in some of those counting categories because he's not compiling as many at bats, as many plate appearances or whatever. But I still think he can be a valuable asset when you take a look at the draft price difference as opposed to a guy like Cespedes. Then I think there's profit potential, even if he's going to miss out on that time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're playing the balance game that I think should be played in these situations. I agree with that. I also think, the regular statement that if a guy ends up having to be platooned, that limits his upside is true. If everything fell right for Yoenis Cespedes, everything fell right, he could hit 38 bombs and knock in 125, batting in the middle of the Mets lineup.
Right, so but Peterson hitting at top of the Dodgers lineup, what if everything – and I'm not saying he could hit, you know, 38 because I don't know that that's in what I feel comfortable predicting. But, like, if a great season for Jock Peterson, could you see him hitting 33 home runs?
I could conceivably see him hitting 33 home runs, but if he's hitting a top of that lineup, he has no chance to hit in the middle of it. I just want to remind her that Dexter Fuller had like 41 RBIs last year hitting atop the Cubs lineup, which was way significantly better than what the Dodgers lineup is going to be this year. So I just think your overall package numbers, your overall upside is lessened greatly by someone who just doesn't – he's not – well, let's just put it the way it is. He's not proven that he's anywhere as close to the kind of baseball player that Cespedes is. And I don't think that's what – that's not what Ben is saying per se. I'm just saying that I think you should look – at players that are undervalued because of the format that you're in, because a lot of the information you look at is not going to be OBP driven or K per nine driven, as Ben was saying. You do need to look at that. I just don't think you want to overpay for it because of it alone. I still think you want to remember in the back of your head, this guy is a significantly better player, and maybe my money, my extra few dollars is better off spent on him. That's all I'm saying.
And real quick, and then I'll let Ben hop back in here because I bet he's feeling a little left out. But Roster Resource has Jock Peterson hitting sixth, which I don't necessarily know that I agree with 100%. I thought I had seen something that Jock was going to hit more towards the top of the lineup. They've got Forsyth, Seager, Turner hitting 1-2-3, Adrian Gonzalez, Grandal, and then Jock at six. So I don't know how much I agree with that necessarily.
Can I come back in?
Yay! What's up, Ben?
Hi, guys.
I didn't want to interrupt either of your guys' train of thought. The one thing that you have to take into account with this is that because it's an auction draft, if you have a strategy that you're trying to follow and you're like, I'm going to take these specific guys and you're then let's say you take them and then you're trying to budget correctly, if everyone else is going for a little bit more than you were expecting. Like, in this case, maybe you thought that that Ryan Braun was only going to go for 18 and he went for 21. That Yelich would go for 23, he went for 25. You know, all those extra values add up. And once you start losing players, once you go through the list, if there's not a lot of players left and you are stuck with only one outfielder in a five outfield elite and a five outfield setting, you guys need to be able to go and actually go and get a player like Jock Peterson. So I get what Chuck is saying, but at the same point in time, you have to like take everything into account where you are in the specific draft, because you may have been patient, but if you were too patient, then it backfires, and then you're forced to take someone like Jock Peterson, and then you get into a bidding war with someone else who was also patient, and that's where the price difference comes in. So maybe Jock Peterson wouldn't have been 15 in another league, but because you have two potential patient owners, it drives up the value.
I agree completely. That's very well put.
Like, I want to find where... if my computer actually works, and it's not working.
Your computer's not working? Is this recording?
What?
No, yeah. I'm just messing around. I'm trying to buy you time, Ben. Roll the punches. Come on.
So, like, in the draft that Justin did was a 12-person league, but in the other one, it was 15-person. You wanted to take a guess at how much more Jock Peterson went for in the 15 person league. He went for $15 in a 12. Throw out guesses anytime you're ready.
$1.
I'm going to guess $19, $4 more.
He went for
20. Okay, damn it.
Yeah, he went for 20.
Good job, Chuck.
No, I wasn't too far off.
But that's the thing, like, clearly enough people are valuing him that what the hell is so funny?
That he said he wasn't too far off and he was a dollar off. It made me laugh. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's my mic wasn't on mute for that. Sorry.
No, that's hilarious. Okay.
Sorry.
But it just shows, like, you know, that there are enough people who value someone like a Jock Peterson. And these guys are people who do it professionally. And, you know, we are on the podcast and stuff like that, but that doesn't necessarily make us any more professional than these guys. And these guys have maybe not as long as Chuck, because Chuck's been around for 80 years, but they've been doing it certainly longer than me. So I can understand if they think that Chuck Peterson is a valuable type, then I can understand it. You know, like, people were looking for a lot of value with look at someone like Eric Hosmer, who went for $10. It's not like Hosmer is a terrible player, but, you know, I still think that Hosmer at $10 is great value. I think Curtis Granderson at $4 is great value. Even someone like Jose Bautista went for $16, and Jose Bautista walks a ton. That's great value, you know? Like, there, you'll get great value. It just depends on when the player comes out, you know?
Right. And that's the thing when you got to look at prices, because you can't always just be like, oh, they went for that amount. And, you know, it's different with how much money is left on the table. And like you were talking about, the last guy in a tier may go for more because they're worried about getting squeezed out. So you look at, you said Hosmer went for $10.
Yeah, Hosmer
to find
went
that.
For $10. And right, well, around that same point, Adrian Beltre had gone for $12. And Brandon Belt went one pick earlier for the exact same $10.
And Greg Bird went for $11, which, correct. I mean, obviously, like, if you're thinking, you would think Bird would go for less than those guys, but you don't know if it's somebody willing to be caught out. That's an interesting, like, as I'm comparing people in my head, like, I was looking at Greg Bird and you said Eric Hosmer, like, at the same price. I don't know how I feel about that. I think I might take Greg Bird in 5x5 categories.
I mean, what about you, Chuck? Are you in the same boat, or are you going with Hosmer?
I'm a Greg Bird guy, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask. I would much rather have Greg Bird. I think people are discounting the fact that he was really good to end the season 2 years ago, and I think they're discounting his surroundings, meaning that power hitter, lefty in Yankee Stadium, which is of course one of my favorite things. So I think I would much rather have Bird, but that doesn't mean that most drafts that I see, Hosmer doesn't go first.
Hosmer's always going to go first, but it just is a little surprising that for a dollar more, Greg Bird was taken. I'm a little surprised that he was taken for just a dollar more. I could have seen it, because I do agree with you guys that he could end up having a better overall season, because I'm not as high on Hosmer. Because I kind of feel that he's peaked, but
I really like Clay Link's team. Just while we're looking at this, he's got Peterson, who we were talking about, but
yeah,
I like his team from top to bottom. Sorry,
but you know, there's some players that, like, I was just a little surprised about overall. Like Andrew Benintendi, he was a player that went for $10 to Elfrink in this league, but went for $20. And the other one that had only three more owners. So, like, that's a big difference in dollar amounts, considering that if you look at the price points at a couple other players, like, wouldn't you agree that that's a big difference, considering it's just an extra three people?
I think it's a big difference, but I think most leagues have prospect mavens in them, or a lot of people who really like young, up-and-coming players. And so I'm actually more surprised that he only went for 10 in the one league than I am that he went for, I thought I saw 19, maybe that was a different league, but 19 or 20 in the other league. So, you know, I'm surprised to a certain extent always by how high some of these guys go that haven't really done it for a long time. And necessarily I don't understand what category Benintendi is supposed to be. Supposed to be very uniquely excellent at.
His best stat this year will be his runs.
Yeah. Hey, have you guys ever seen the movie Rookie of the Year with the kid that hurts his arm and pitches for the Cubs?
Kid, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You know when he throws the pitch up in the air? Here you go, Chuck. Andrew Benintendi went for $10. Keon Broxton went for $8. Who would you rather have?
Yeah, that's you're throwing me a softball there.
That was what I was getting at. Thank you.
I would much rather have Broxton, although, I mean, I will openly admit that Broxton has significant issues with plate discipline, as far as, his batting average could be very bad because he's got a high strikeout rate. But again, Your good player should help hold up your batting average to a certain extent. And I would not be stunned if Keon Broxton managed to hit at least 245 or 250, which is not the drain that it used to be in roto leagues.
Chuck, who would you rather have, David Dahl at 10 or
Benintendi
at 10?
I would rather have Benintendi because I'm more secure with his playing time, although I do think that if Benintendi starts to struggle at all or goes through rough stretches, I do think, unfortunately, Chris Young will steal some playing time, and there will be some there'll be some Brock Holt in there, who obviously his buddy in the other league that only drafts Red Sox and Red Sox.
So you're saying Brock Holt was worth 155 overall?
No, I think that might be his highest draft. If you could do the highest he's drafted countrywide, I think 155 might be the highest that Brock Holt was drafted.
Absolutely.
Would you rather have Odubel Herrera at 13 or Andrew Benintendi at 10?
I think I would rather have Odubel there. I think that Odubel showed some good signs for a while last year, and I think you're looking at somebody who could be very good in steals and very good in runs. It's very close, though. That one wouldn't surprise me if people wanted to go either way with that one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I just have a soft spot for Odubel since he was a Rule 5 pick, etc.
Yeah. The only other one that I was a little surprised about was Kevin Kiermaier going at 9. What are your guys' thoughts on Kiermaier at $9?
Kiermaier is a red hot sleeper pick for a lot of people. His defense keeps him on the field. He's got home run upside and stolen base upside. I'm fine with that price for him. I know he's got a clear up some issues that he's got at the plate, so his batting average is a little bit better. But I think Kevin Kiermaier strikes me as a very good buy for that price.
What about you, Evan? Anything?
I was still looking for Brock Holt stuff. So what, Kiermaier?
Yes, at $9.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Thanks for that fantasy insight.
That's it. Sorry, I'm so distracted by this.
Don't worry. We're going to move on now, Evan. Don't worry. We're going to move into Chuck's comments so that we don't get you distracted anymore. Don't worry.
Chuck's comments are way more interesting than anything I have going on. Lay it on me, Chuck.
Yeah, just shoot. So, Chuck, what are some players that you thought were really good values in this draft? Because I've given you mine.
Okay. Well, I spanned the Tout Wars drafts and came up with some really good values that I liked a lot. One of them that I liked a lot was I liked Jurickson Profar for $1. He went for $11 in the AL only league, so he went for $1 in the mixed league. He's just 24 years.
Which mixed league, the head to head or the roto?
The roto. It said the auction on it.
Yeah, that's
so. Anyway, he went for $1. You know, he had a 9.8% walk rate last year, which I liked. He played all over the field, almost got eligibility, multiple positions. He only had 19 games at second base. He had 17, I think, at first. So, but he's only eligible to start the year at third base. But they're projecting, a lot of people are projecting him to hit leadoff and play left field most days in Texas. So I think a $1 gamble on Jurickson Profar was a really excellent price. You guys have any thoughts on Profar, who's a guy that we have not talked about much? Why don't we start with you, Evan? What do you think about Profar this year?
I mean, my question with him is going to be playing time, but I think he was playing pretty well in the WBC, wasn't he?
Yeah. He played very well, yep.
Yeah, and so I think it's, as a late round pick, I don't think you're talking about, like, dice rolls. Is he any better than Raul Mondesi Jr.? I don't know. Maybe. But
Mondesi?
Dude, you don't want to... Don't even get on me about player pronunciations.
Mondesi. All right, Justin Mason.
I think Profar's pedigree is roughly 50 times better than Mondesi's is at this point, as far as, he was a highly touted top 10 style prospect. Number one prospect for a brief period before the injuries took over. So, and the fact that he was playing shortstop again last year, I don't really consider those two to be in the same to be in the same ilk yet this year. I think Profar is a much better gamble. How about you, Ben? What do you think about Profar this year?
I mean, I like Profar as long as he gets the playing time, because I believed in him a lot last year, and after he had a good hot streak, I actually went and flipped him because I kind of felt that he was going to have to come down because there was just no way he kept it up, and he didn't. He slumped a lot more than I had expected, because I do think that he's a good hitter and a good player overall. I think that he had just been coming back from not playing over the last couple of years, and I'm sure everything all just kind of took a little toll on him in terms of his endurance throughout the season. So I do think that he'll be able to get the playing time this year, and I think that they're going to look to be able to move him around. To be fair, I'm a little bit bummed that they had signed Napoli in that extent, because they could have looked to play him a little bit at first base, or could have moved people around so that he could get more consistent playing time. But I do think that they'll still find a way to get him on the diamond at least 5 times a week.
I think that's very likely. I think he's going to play even a little bit more than that. I just think that Napoli is an older player who needs some time at DH. I think that Adrian Beltre obviously is a very old style player, so he will need some time off, and any injuries, he's someone who's proven he could play all around the diamond. So I kind of think he's a poor man's Hernan Perez, maybe without as much stolen base upside. But I thought he was a good buy for a dollar. Now I've got one more dollar player I want to cover, and I want to throw in some news as well. Did you guys hear Colton Wong's statement today that he would rather be traded than have to platoon, despite the fact that he's playing terrible? And that has reemerged one Jed Jorko on my radar. So Jed Jorko for a dollar, a guy who hit 30 home runs last year. You like Jed Jorko any more than you did before that news, Evan?
Well, one thing, being a guy that owns Wong in a dynasty league, he got demoted last year. He was pretty awful.
He sucks.
Yeah, it was not in my middle infield situation is kind of a mess in that league. So I just kind of need anybody with a pulse. But Wong was a guy that he was getting jerked around. And as far as people want to talk about playing time crunches with the Cubs, like you look at the infield for the Cardinals, you could see just as easily how a guy like Wong is just erased and nobody cares. You look at like Peralta, what they're going to do with Carpenter and Diaz, and just kind of the whole situation that they have going on. I am not going anywhere near Colton Wong this year, and I don't think this is breaking news. Didn't we talk about this? I feel like this is not the first time I've heard this come out of Colton Wong's mouth.
Yeah, that could be. But I think Jed Jorko becomes a guy with significant upside if...
Jerko's got platoon issues, but, I mean, it's...
And if he's actively griping, that just does not seem like a thing that the Cardinals Nation is going to take too lightly or want to take too much of, especially when it seemed like they were going out on a limb to just play them as much as they were trying to play them going into the spring training. How do you feel about Jed Jorko? You think his value is on the rise now, Ben?
I mean, I do, but I kind of thought that beforehand because I think Colton Wong is terrible. I really bought into Colton Wong 2 years ago. And I really thought that he was going to become a good player, someone who's going to be able to get steals, hit for some power, get runs, hit for average. And he hasn't done anything that I thought he was going to be able to do. I took him high in a bunch of drafts, and I held on to him for so long because I was so convinced that he was going to be able to do anything, and he didn't. And all the teams I inherited last year that I owned him in, I traded him before the season even started because I didn't believe in the dude at all. And he proved me right. He didn't do anything worthwhile. He didn't make me think that he's able to be a player. And Jed Jerko's not a good player. Like, I'm not a fan of Jerko whatsoever. But if you get Jerko for a dollar, he's going to be valuable. And that's what happens. Sometimes you just get lucky with a dollar bid and you get someone who you expected to platoon and put up decent numbers, maybe putting up better numbers because of a situation like this.
Jerko is absolute dog shit against right-handers. I hadn't realized that he was this bad until I started looking at his splits. He's 23% strikeout, and not that he doesn't strike out against left-handers, but he walks less against righties, 231 batting average, sub-300 OBP. Yuck.
All right, well, now that we looked at Jed Jerko a little bit, mixed it in with some news, the other picks that I really like, Keon Broxton and Greg Bird, we covered. There's only one other one that I'd like to cover, and maybe I've been on serious drugs this whole offseason because I've seriously thought this the whole way through. Matt Holliday went for $3 in an AL-only league, and my question is, how much do you think moving to the American League, moving to Yankee Stadium, being able to DH, hit a pretty rock-bottom season for himself last year, but he still managed 20 home runs. Do you think $3 is a good value and a good gamble on Matt Holliday? It seemed like the move to Yankee Stadium helped prolong Carlos Beltran to an extent, although Beltran is a more athletic player early in his career than Holliday has been. So what do you think? Matt Holliday for $3, Ben. Let's start with you.
I do think that it's a good deal. I really like it. I'm not a big Matt Holliday fan after the injuries that have basically sapped his ability over the last couple of years, but I do believe that he's able to get rejuvenated by this move, and I think that for $3 it's worth the gamble because, if nothing else, if he's healthy for the season, you're going to get power. And for $3 to get potentially 20 home runs and like 70 RBIs or better, then, you know, you can't ask for a lot more from a $3 player, especially one that you could go either way on. If he's hurt, then, you know, you could get rid of him or you can DL him, or, you know, he could be healthy and he could actually could give you double the value back. So I do like the deal. What about you, Evan?
I mean, yeah, he's an interesting value for sure, but I was looking at kind of his batting eye numbers, which were a little weird last year. Chuck said serious drugs, and I kind of went on my own little tangent there. But I do think he's being underdrafted, and we have kind of talked about where he ranks. Do you think he's the best Yankees outfielder this year, Ben? We talked about this last week without you.
That he's the best overall outfielder in terms of like the play rater, you mean?
That's on the Yankees, yes.
But in terms of play rater or in real life?
Well, since we're doing a fantasy baseball podcast, I'll go with the first one.
Real life, got it. In terms of play rater, I think if he plays 120 games, he will be. I think if I put them to all play the same amount of games, I would pick Matt Holliday as the best one. The problem is I think that Matt Holliday is probably the least likely to stay healthy for the longest out of the three main outfielders. Well, are we counting Aaron Judge?
No. I mean, I was just counting Brett Gardner and Jacoby Ellsbury, and I think Jacoby Ellsbury is more likely to get hurt than Holliday, no?
It depends. Matt Holliday is just—he's able to get hurt. The things that you see with Ellsbury are those soft tissue injuries, and those can pop up, and they have popped up. But I just feel like every single thing is going wrong with Holliday over the last couple years. It's just a real crapshoot as to if he's going to be hurt or not, and if he's hurt, is it going to be a lingering injury? At least you know that when Ellsbury goes down with a hamstring injury, he's going to be out for X amount of time, but when he comes back, he'll most likely be good to go again, and you know what his skill set is overall, and he'll still be able to get the steals. With Holliday, you know, you had a season like last year where you just didn't expect that at all based on his previous numbers.
Well, it sounds like we're all in semi-agreement that Holliday is worth the $3 gamble there. So I'm going to switch to buys that really jumped off the page as bad to me. And the first one I'm going to start off with is Hanley Ramirez at $24. He's 33 years old. Since 2012, he had a season where he hit 257, a season where he hit 249, two other seasons in the mid-280s. And he's only played 128-plus games once since 2013. I don't know what more history we need to think that Hanley Ramirez is no longer a $24-style player. So I do not like Hanley Ramirez for $24. What do you think about Hanley Ramirez for $24, Evan?
I mean, when you kind of look at what some of the other first basemen went for, like, no, I'm out on Hanley, and I don't know why the home runs spiked as much as they did. As far as, you know, being the first 30 home run season that we've seen out of him since 2008, and part of that might have been the ability to stay on the field. But I'm not in on Hanley this year. I would rather sit around and wait and take a dude like Napoli, who I think, you know, minus whatever. And what do you think Hanley's going to chip in the stolen base department, I guess, would be kind of my question if you're looking at him and player rater against other first basemen, because if he's at 10, it's going to boost him up the charts. But Steamer has him projected at 6. Zips has him at 9.
How about you, Ben? What are your initial thoughts about Hanley Ramirez as a $24 buy?
My initial thoughts are that it was maybe a bit high, but if you look at what the overall value of certain players at the first baseman market are going for, it really just depends on how the rest of your team is built. You know, you could just go really cheap and try to grab someone super late if needed, but I think that in this type of league, Hanley isn't bad value whatsoever. I may want to potentially wait and get someone who's just slightly cheaper, someone like a Greg Bird if I'm not as high on Hanley. But I think that Hanley is going to be able to come close to a $20 to $25 player, probably closer to 20 at the end of the season than 24 though.
Well, Ben's higher on Hanley. I mean, with Hanley, it's never the question of his ability. It seems like he wanders in his skull, and he always has. And so, and he's had some body breakdowns in recent seasons. So I could see him potentially living up to that, but it's not a gamble I want to take with Hanley being 33 years old. So mild disagreement makes for a good podcast. Hey, another one I really wanted to mention, because we haven't spoke of him very much, is that Jared Dyson went for $17. And I noted his projections on ESPN, a .256 batting average, 2 home runs, 30 RBIs, 54 runs scored, and 45 stolen bases. And that Jared Dyson has never had more than 300 at-bats in a season. So I know maybe someone really got trapped for steals, and that's why they jumped on Dyson, because in limited playing time, he's managed to be in the 30 steal zone a lot. But I don't think I could sleep well at night had I paid $17 for Jared Dyson in any form of a fantasy draft. So, Ben, we'll go right back to you. What do you think about Jared Dyson for $17?
Yeah, that's a bit expensive for me. I mean, I get what he's able to do, but I feel like I could wait. Like, you know, this is which league exactly? I'm sorry.
I believe this was the AL only league, the AL only auction. Yeah. But $17 just seems like I can't fathom it.
I mean, $17 is a lot, but then I look at someone like Sinchu Chu, who I understand is really, really, really valuable in this type of format, and he goes for $16. But I feel like if I'm going to spend $17, like, I'd rather just like spend a couple extra and like go get someone else, you know? Like, I'd rather go spend an extra $3 and potentially go get a Trumbo, or I'd rather spend like an extra $2 and potentially get a Kiermaier. Or let's see if I can find someone else really quick.
Rajai Davis went for $17. I mean, I think I'd rather have Davis.
Would you guys rather have Mazzara at $17?
Overall, I think I would. I think one of the questions that comes in with Jerod Dyson that we haven't really spoke of is, are we certain that he's going to get a massive amount of playing time, which he hasn't done before? Meaning that, you know, Leonis Martin is on the team. Mitch Haniger's ripping up the spring. Perhaps that outfield is getting more crowded than we projected it to be to a certain extent. So that's where some of the doubt comes in for me. If they're going to stroll him out there and he's going to manage to hit 256, I think probably some of these numbers are underrated, especially the runs scored. I think he'd score a lot more than 54 runs if he did that in an American League lineup.
But, well, yeah, especially since I think a lot of places were projecting him to be the leadoff man in Seattle, at least against right-handed pitching.
Yeah. So, Evan, could you see getting in a spot where you'd be okay spending $17 on Jerod Dyson?
No. I mean, I understand it's an AL-only league, and I was looking at the mixed draft where he went for, I think it was $3, and a guy like Travis Jankowski didn't even get drafted until the reserve picks. So, like, I would just rather wait for a guy like Jankowski, who's been pretty decent this spring and I think is going to get some playing time. So, I've had doubts about Dyson leading off in Seattle. I think Gene Segura is probably a better fit for that role. And I mean, if Dyson's hitting first in Seattle with the line, if he's batting in front of Segura, Kyle Seager, Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, he scores more than 54 runs. Like, I just don't understand that math.
Yeah, me too. That's why I said that was the number that I think they were pretty low on. 30 RBIs, you know, it's not that easy to play a lot and only have 30 RBIs. But at the same time, you know, he's not a guy who's going to drive in a lot of people with, you know, with home runs or what have you, obviously, when he's only projected for 2 home runs. So I thought Jerod Dyson was interesting, and we haven't really spoken of him. You know, like I said, be interesting to see how all that playing time doles out and that lineup in Seattle works itself out. Another buy that I thought was especially curious and dubitable, if you will, was Miguel Sano for $22. You know, I'm not a Miguel Sano expert per se, but I do know that his year last year was pretty poor, and he's not in the middle of a very good offense. So $22 for Miguel Sano definitely struck me as very high. And with his strikeout rate, I can't see him as being excelling in the OBP category either. So what do you think about Miguel Sano for $22, Evan?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about the strikeouts, if it's an OBP league, you also have to talk about the walks. And I know he had a really good walk rate in 2015. That was up over 15%. Last year, it was less than 11%. So you'd think as he sees more pitching, he would probably get better. But it didn't help cut down his strikeout rate. But I think this is a guy that if you're talking about just pure potential, that, you know, 30 home runs is kind of a easy number to pin on him. And if, you know, he's not going to go on a nuts binge like Brian Dozier did. But I mean, if Dozier can score 100 runs off the strength of hitting 42 dingers in this lineup, then I think that the RBI numbers could look a little bit better for the run numbers, the counting numbers. He's a good hitter, damn it.
All right, Ben, how about you? I generally like Miguel Sano, and I might be suffering from some sticker shock because one of my leagues is using a very goofy price sheet that we talked about last week, and Miguel Sano is $3 in that league, so $22 seems like a lot. But am I off base on thinking that Miguel Sano for $22 is a little pricey?
I mean, it's a little pricey, but I'm not a big Sano fan in general. I wasn't last year. I'm not really this year. But in an AL only, you kind of are very limited what you're able to do. And it's like Evan was saying, he could potentially get the walk rate back. So we'll kind of have to see. In an AL only, because of the likelihood that you're going to use him in the outfield because of how little good outfielders there are, and when you need 5, I could understand spending between $15 and $19 on him, and I can understand how you get priced up to $20 plus dollars you know, sometimes you're like, well, I really need this guy or I really want this guy. So you spend like an extra dollar or two and, you know, that's how the price comes up a little bit. But I probably would have spent like $18 on him, $19 maybe. And if I was getting like price enforced, then I could, I'd look at getting him for $22. But I think that's what happened here. I think he got a little, I think Nando DeFino got priced up a little bit.
Well, that is one thing about Sano. He's a player that seemingly there's one owner in every league that's very, very high on because his pedigree was so good. He's an odd. He had Tommy John surgery, and that's what cost him a year, which is, of course, different for a player than it is for a pitcher. But at the same time, you know, I like it better than the other. I like it better than Hanley Ramirez for $24, actually, which probably puts me in the minority there. Just one more player I want to mention, and that's Danny Duffy went for $22 in the American League only league. And I partially, sometimes I want to mention these guys because I hear news and see news around the web on them. And Danny Duffy's average velocity is down in the 92 to 93 range now, in comparison to being 95 or 96. Early in the year last year. So $22 for Danny Duffy. I love him when I see him as a bargain, when I see him go in that middle tier of pitching, but it seems like $22 pushes him up too high for me. What are your feelings on Danny Duffy this year, Evan?
I can't remember if we were talking about this either on air or before, but I think the helium, if you will, the hype. I was trying to come up with a different word. I keep listening to these podcasts and everybody uses the same words and trying to do something different, damn it. But it's the only word that makes sense.
Why do you always have to steal everyone else's stuff?
It's not...
why are you going to be a plagiarism person?
I'm not. I'm sorry. There's just only so many words that you can use to explain that the talk on the town is way too loud on this dude. And I would just rather wait. Like Kevin Gausman went for $13. Like sign me up all day over that. McCullers went for $9. Like I could just go on and keep throwing names out that I don't understand why people are overpaying for Duffy.
Yeah, I mean he's got a pretty checkered past as far as health is concerned, and I think that needs to get mixed in there. And I don't know if everyone who's bidding on him is really weighing that in enough. But the voice of reason on this podcast is always Ben. So, Ben, why don't you talk to us about Danny Duffy?
If I have to.
Well, you don't have to. This isn't Russia. This is not Russia, Ben.
I didn't realize that. I thought there was bears riding unicycles outside. I like Duffy. I just wouldn't pay $22 for him. Now, he could be good, but there's other players who I'd rather have that are in the price range, if not a little bit cheaper, that I would rather have than a $22. Like, I'd rather have Chris Archer for $22. I mean, I understand that it's a K per nine league and stuff, but, you know, you could still go for someone like Carlos Carrasco, who may or may not be healthy, but I still like Carrasco and I save $2, or Salazar and I save $8. And yes, I understand that they're not the healthiest people, but, you know, I could go get Michael Fulmer and save some money. I could have tried to go get Michael Fulmer and save the $7 and use that $7 extra dollars to try to go get Corey Kluber. You know, I would have much rather have, like, a Corey Kluber and Michael Fulmer thing than just have, like, a Danny Duffy and, I don't know, Francisco Liriano combo.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point, that the dollar scheme takes out a different definitely takes on more magnitude when you're speaking about roster construction in these auction style formats. So that's why some of these prices really jumped off the page for me. And I didn't want to beat any dead horses, so we didn't even talk about Javi Baez for $20.
Chuck, why are you hanging around dead horses, if you don't mind me asking? That seems kind of freaky.
I'm just a gloomy individual. What can I say?
Oh my God! I don't know what do out in Wisconsin, but
maybe we're trying to sell them over to Europe since those crazy Europeans eat horse meat. Anyway, but besides all that, we wanted to cover some stuff on Tout, and we wanted to be supportive of our man Justin, which I think we've successfully managed to do. Ben, why don't you sign us off of this rickety wagon that we're riding on?
It's a rickety wagon, but he gets to the finish line every time.
Is that creepy? Or
it sounded a little creepy.
as creepy as you get, which is not nearly as creepy as me and Evan get. So,
well,
anyway, Evan, share your why don't you share your Twitter handle with us and tell us if, what you're working on, and we'll get this train off the tracks here.
Yeah, no, it's already way off the tracks. No worries there. At EasyEv3 on Twitter. Let's talk some baseball. Let's make fun of Ben Brennus. Let's make Twitter great again and not talk about Russia and bears. But what was that with the bears and the unicycles?
Have you not seen Family Guy?
I have, but I don't watch
the
it.
One, there's the one where they have Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase, and they have Stewie and Brian go over to Russia because someone was a double agent or something. I forget exactly. I think James Woods was like a double agent or something. And they get over to Russia, and they're like, oh, don't stick out like a sore thumb. And everyone is literally a bear riding a unicycle in Russia.
Oh.
Well, there we go. We have that. And on that note, I'm really glad that Ben gets to edit out this podcast. And I don't
I'm
anyway,
gonna edit, Ben. I'm going to edit the entire podcast out.
That would be almost understandable in this case. Ben, why don't you tout yourself up as well, Mr. Tout Wars?
I am at BBrennusFWFB. I am currently hosting the Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast with Eric Mackey. Once baseball season gets underway and basketball season ends, I will be doing some writing, probably focusing on more head-to-head leagues. Than anything else, and potentially more focusing on pitchers than hitting. But I'm looking forward to getting ready to get back into the groove of writing and everything. And, you know, like I said, Tout was a great experience. I look forward to doing it again in the future if we're able to. And, yeah, it was great to be able to meet a lot of the industry people. What about you,
Chuck? Yes, that sounds like a lot of fun. I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I want to give a tease to our listeners that in the coming weeks, it sure looks like we're going to have both Honcho, who used to work with Mr. Evan, and we're going to have Scott Barzilla of Fantasy Fix on to help keep the train a little bit closer to the tracks and the destination. But I think we covered some players tonight, and I like that. And we covered some auction strategy, which you don't get a lot of other places. So I want to wish everyone the best of luck at their drafts this week. And please, the one thing I would always tell everyone in their drafts is make sure you draft your team, meaning get players you like and you enjoy watching, because that's half the fun of fantasy baseball. So for Ben and Evan and Chuck, this rickety wagon is going offline. We will talk to you guys next week. Thanks.